So we'll bring it back here to Chris, subbing in for Michael, who is Mikhail. So
my name is Mikhail Romanov. I used to be the Tsar of Russia. I actually went to the University of Smallopia and studied economics. Got a 3.9 there when you translate it to your system here. I work at our embassy here in New York, our embassy to the United States, as part of the trade delegation from our Ministry of Trade. I've been there for 5 years. 680 on the GMAT, 88 percentile on the quant, which I'm not real happy, but it's the verbal that killed 64th. Percentile, and I got a 4.5 on the essays, which is like 60th or something percent, 55th. I mean, so I'm applying to all these, to INSEAD, London, NYU, Columbia, HBS, Wharton, and Yale, round one. And then round two, MIT, Kellogg, and Chicago. And I'm going to get in somewhere because I got to. And that's who I am. So there.
Chris is also a method actor. I saw him downstairs prepping for the role of Mikhail. He was watching old Russian cinema. Okay, so let's pick apart this profile here. I guess so. You were very, very upset about your GMAT score there.
Yeah. It kills me. It's like, because I took it three times. I studied so hard. I took these classes. I did extra tutoring. I did all this stuff. And I just couldn't break 700. I couldn't, and it kills me because, I mean, in my country, I took 6 months off to study for the entrance exam to the University of Smallopia. And so I'm wondering, should I take it a fourth time?
Let me ask you a question. I mean, were your scores pretty consistent? Were you showing an upward trend? Do you feel like you can do better?
I basically did this the last two times. The first time I performed worse, but.
Right. I mean, at some point, Mikhail, you just got to cut your losses. The GMAT isn't everything. A 680 is not the end of the world. And there's no point in spending another, countless hours with tutors and studying if you're just – sometimes you max out.
But it kills me because I speak English so well. I mean, that 4.5 on the AWA, I'm better than a 55th percentile or whatever it is on that. I mean, I use English every day.
Right.
We have meetings in English every day.
Right. And you speak Italian, French, and
Smallopian. I speak these other languages, too, as I play other.
The GMAT isn't necessarily a measure of – the verbal side isn't necessarily a measure your English language skills, and if you're worried that they're going to get a negative message about that, they have your AWA, and a 4.5, it's not a 6, but you certainly are going to show proficiency in English in your writing with a 4.5, and you're working in English every day, and if it's something, again, this is the type of thing you can talk about in the optional essay, but I think you've just got to, emotionally, you've got to let that go. You just gotta let it go and move on to working on your applications. The essays are out, and if you spend another 3 months working on that, you're gonna have a crappy 10 applications.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you think that I don't need to take the GMAT again, but I'm worried about, no one's heard of Smallopia, let alone the University of Smallopia. I mean, but we are the number one university in Smallopia, and, the rankings of Smallopia News and World Report, we're number one in economics, and so I was thinking of, attaching that, to my application, we're number one in Smallopia.
Right. I don't think that's necessary. The schools they visit and they see different candidates from all around the world and all the time, and they're familiar with the better schools and the worse schools. But I almost don't even want to engage in that conversation with you because I'm afraid you're gonna start really thinking, okay, they do know that school, and really what's more important, or they might not know my school because I'm from an underrepresented country, but they might know other schools, and I think that the the more important thing is your 3.9, and even the fact that it was a real effort to get into your school and your country, and you know.
But I didn't. I was number two in my high school class in Smallopia. Number one went to Harvard, came here, went to Harvard undergrad, and you know that's what HBS is looking for, is Harvard undergrads, and I, you know.
Yeah, but HBS is—it's not a school of Harvard undergrad. Like Harvard Business School is not all Harvard undergrad, and they let in people from all around the world every year. You don't have to have gone to Harvard to get into Harvard; otherwise, they wouldn't open the application process to everyone. And so it's really you're far more than your undergraduate grades and your GMAT, and you've got a great foundation here. You've got, you know, you're from small. How many other applicants are there applying from Smallopia?
Not many.
Not many, right?
We're very small.
You're very small. So, you know, this is a huge advantage for you. And then I think the fact that you've been working with the Ministry of Trade, you've been there for 5 years, you've had, you know, talk about international experience. I think this is a really, really, you know, a great, great foundation for your application. I think that, you know, you have to start maybe focusing on the positives and the negatives, and seeing that, you know, that you've got a lot going for you here.
Okay, so you're going to help me get my 7 applications ready for round 1, and then my 3 applications ready for round 2.
No, I mean we're not. That's really an awful lot to do. I mentioned before, we were at Columbia yesterday, and at Columbia, one of the I believe the assistant dean of admissions said to us, and to our shock and dismay, said that he felt that 20% of applicants out there crossed off the name of one school and inserted the name of the next, and that those candidates, I believe, maybe I'll paraphrase, I think he said, were just simply quickly thrown in the garbage. They really wanted to know at Columbia in particular because they're trying so hard to forge a community and try to make sure people are very committed to Columbia, because they've got kind of a bit of a negative, maybe unfair stereotype as a commuter school. They really want to have people who are committed to being there and know the school well. So that translates to every school. That's not just about Columbia.
Well, I'm committed to all these schools.
I mean,
I have to go to school next year, right, and I have to get into one of these schools because it's the, I mean, it, in Smallopia, they haven't heard of you know, the wherever, little places.
Like other little places like Smallopia,
they've heard of Harvard and they've heard of INSEAD and Wharton. You know, they don't know how to say it, but they've heard of it. And so, I have to get into one of these schools. So
well,
it's, you know.
I mean, I think you know, if you have to do your applications well, period. It's not going to help you, even if you have to get into one of those schools. And I can see you're emotional about it. You have to get in, but you're not going to get in through volume. You're going to get in through quality. And fewer applications done very, very well will benefit you, not more applications done poorly. And you don't have to determine the number you're going to do today, although I would say applying to 7 to 10 schools, 7 in the first round and 10 overall would be the most that I've ever seen. If you can hypothetically get it done incredibly well, then more power to you if you actually do want to attend one of these 10 institutions. But I think what's more likely is that you would start applying and do a few well, and then determine at some point whether you want to keep adding schools if you feel that you have the time to do a high quality job. And at MBA Mission, we tend to keep people, whether they work with us or not, we tend to advise candidates to apply to between 4 and 6 schools if they're conservative applicants. Anything beyond that, if you're not going to get into your 6th school, you're probably not going to get into your 7th school. You're probably doing something wrong. You're probably targeting the wrong schools. Maybe you think you're a better employee than you are, and you've got some recommenders who are throwing you under the bus or something like that. But there's going to be a problem. So I think for you, what I would recommend is some education. You know, spending some time really thinking about what types of environments you want to be in, thinking about what schools fit with your goals in the future. And, you know, maybe considering a couple of other safe schools, because I think that even though you're a Smallopian and that really will help you, and you've got some good work experience, very distinct, I still think there's nothing out there that I see as safe. And I know we haven't talked too much.
Yeah, what's a safe school? Is that a school that Smallopia hasn't heard of? Is that what that means?
Well, for everyone, a safe school is different. You know, a safe school is really, every year we have people who apply and they say, okay, I'll apply to, I don't want to pick on anyone in particular, I'm Canadian, so I'll go with the University of Winnipeg, which is my hometown. You know, I'm applying to the University of Winnipeg, which does not have a business school. And you know, people say, okay, I'll apply there, but I'm not going to go there. Okay, that makes no sense at all. Why bother applying there? So, you know, you have to pick a school that you think you can get into, and that is you know, acceptable to you. It has something that you can offer, but also one where you're probably, you know, your GMAT score is maybe a little bit higher, or they don't have someone you've never had someone from your country, or they'd be delighted to have someone who has this kind of international political experience. And if for everyone, that's different. And it really just depends on your risk profile, on what schools you want to apply to. Everyone has a different risk profile. Some other person here put in your shoes might believe that you know, Chicago is as safe as they want to be. That's a pretty risky risk profile, in my opinion.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Is there anything else that's on your mind?
No, that's it right now.
Okay. Well, let's go through the summary points here. GMAT is not everything. It's one of many components. Your work experience is actually the most important component, in my opinion. People can't get in without solid work experience. After that, there's a balance. And if you have a weak GMAT score, again, like we talked about with Jennifer, you can make up for it in other ways. And especially if you can't improve, let it go. There's no point in taking that test over and over and over again. One thing I will say is that if you don't do well on the test, the admissions committee is going to want to see you take the test twice. It's a myth that they only want you taking it once. They're going to want to see you try again. They want to know that you at least put some effort into it. And so our friend Mikhail, taking it three times, having the same score twice, he sent the message that he's done everything he can, and it's time to move on. And again, you know, just explaining his weaknesses via the optional essay. You know, he isn't struggling to read the questions. He's entirely conversant. It's nothing that he you know, his English language skills are not an issue, and he can explain that. Undergraduate performance is more important than undergraduate institution. Absolutely. They want the trajectory of your grades, the kind of classes you've taken, the stresses of those classes, you know, how difficult they are. The schools read your transcripts. Most of them will say they read your transcripts, you know, course by course. And so, you know, worry more about your grades instead of the institution. If anything, if they don't have someone from your institution or your country, that's generally a positive. You do not need alumni connections to succeed. And in fact, this year, Harvard Business School actually asked their alumni to stop sending in supplementary letters of recommendation because they were just getting so many, and so many alumni wanted to have influence, and they couldn't. All they were doing was alienating their own alumni by not responding to them and letting it, you know, not responding via admissions. So you don't need to have alumni connections to get into these schools. And again, the schools want to have some diversity. They don't want to have, you know, 800 identical people in their classroom. Finally, applying everywhere is a mistake. Fewer better applications is the rule. You know, target schools that appeal to you and do your homework, looking at different attributes that schools have, and we talked about them a little bit with class size. That's one of them. You might feel better in a certain size of class, a certain kind of location, a certain structure to the curriculum, case or lecture. You know, a certain kind of flexibility where you're allowed to pick your courses from day one, or where someone has picked all of them for you from day one. And so, you know, really do your homework, and you know, really try to consider your own risk profile in terms of applying. And I can't say it enough. Really try to get away from rankings. The rankings come and go. Your life hopefully will not come and go.